Raised Rowdy.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Raised Rowdy podcast. I am Nick Tressler.
My name is Kurt Ozon.
And we have our guest this week, Mr. Jed Harrelson. Thanks
What's
for being
on?
Here.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Of course, brother. Thanks for jumping out. I know we were talking a little bit before the area, or you're familiar with the area because you used to live out here, so did I.
Yeah.
Kurt's always lived in East Nashville because he's super cool.
Not always. He used to live in Midtown. Used to be cooler.
Yeah.
And when I first moved here, somebody asked me where I lived. And I lived right off Tulip Grove in Hermitage.
Yeah.
And I told him I lived in East Nashville because I thought east of Nashville was East Nashville. And I had some people just really kind of let me have it for that. And but no, this area, definitely.
They're like,
I know.
You dirty imposter.
Yeah, they're like, you don't even know anything about
Nashville.
I haven't even
seen you at Dino's yet.
Yeah. I had never even been to East Nashville at that point. And so,
yeah.
You learn things.
I am East Nashville.
East of Nashville is what it was, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit confusing every time you go somewhere new, but I mean, that's how it all works. Yeah. Then you figure it out.
What did you do to move to town?
I moved to town, perfect time, January of 2020, right before COVID started. And, It was an interesting move. It was, you know, I just graduated college and I was going to pursue my dream in Nashville. Big, heavy dreams. Got here for 2 months and then COVID happened. Yeah. The job I had, you know, got laid off. And
what were you doing?
I was parking cars.
Hell yeah.
At the graduate hotel. I was top flight valet. I'd worked my way up.
What's the coolest car you've ever driven?
I don't know. There wasn't a lot of nice cars. There wasn't a lot of nice stuff there.
Any Subarus?
Oh, so many Subarus.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, a lot of Subs.
So you can drive stick then, huh?
Mediocrely, but, you
Damn,
know.
Man, what a real man over here.
Well, first time I learned at the graduate.
The gig?
Okay. First time they asked me if I could drive stick. I was like, oh, yeah, hell yeah, I can. And never really did it, and I stalled right there in front of the owner of the vehicle. And they're like, all right, you're never doing this again. And they ended up teaching me how to do it. So, yeah. I mean, I can mediocrely. But
what kind of car was it?
Probably a Subaru, you know.
What? I want to hear like McLaren or something.
No, man. It was not a place that was bringing in like fancy cars.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, Subarus are nice, right?
Hey, Subarus. I mean, I have a Subaru.
Same, bro. Know?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Nick, you need to get a Subaru.
Yeah, I'm good, but I do love my Hyundai, and it's probably less expensive than a Subaru.
And probably easier to fix, too.
Yeah.
There's gives and takes, you know.
Yeah. I've never been, like, a crazy car person. I remember, when I was younger, I was like, this would be cool to have this.
Yeah.
I remember I lived in Western Pennsylvania, and I got a Mustang, and I had an SUV, too. So I'm like, I'll drive that in the winter, and then I'll get this Mustang, and then the SUV broke like month six of me having the Mustang.
Yeah.
And I drove around a rear-wheel drive Mustang through the winter for like 5 years. It was
should have had an all-wheel drive Subaru.
Yeah, honestly.
We're not sponsored by Subaru. We just really like the car.
No, Kurt's driven one forever.
Yeah. I bought mine actually during COVID because my Jeep blew up. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll never tour again, so I might as well get something affordable. And yeah, anyway. So back to your life story here.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got fired from the valet thing because of COVID, or laid off, I should say.
Got laid off, went back home to Arkansas for, you know, 3 or 4 months, was working at a liquor store because
they were still open.
Arkansas was still open.
Yeah.
Arkansas as a state kind of was, but then, you know, everybody went to the liquor stores to get, you know, the liquor store that I worked at was right next to this bank, and so people would get their stimulus check and get right in line at the liquor store. It was an interesting time. Did that for a little bit, and then June of 2020, came back to Nashville. The hotel opened back up. I started working again, top flight valet again. You know, made some awesome cash. It was cool. Drove some cool people's cars, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think in that moment, I was like, it's not that I was meeting him, but I was parking a lot of cars for some of these country artists who were coming in, doing a little show at the new hotel, graduate hotel, doing all these shows and stuff. And so,
is that where the Analog is?
No. Right down the street, but same concept.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. They got a little venue in there. I did that until August of 2020. That's when I got fired for other reasons. Mm-hmm. I was parking Casey Musgrave's car, mm-hmm. and I was like, what an opportunity to promote myself, right? So I left my business card in her car, and on the back of it, I said, I'm new to Nashville, also from East Texas. I love your music. Give mine a listen.
Yeah.
And like 3 hours later, my boss comes outside and is like, Casey Musgrave's called and is pissed about the valet who left the card in the car and Jade, you're fired. Basically fired me August of 2020. It sucked, but I mean, it was a, you know, I was young, I was hungry, and I was like, this is how you make it. You just bug somebody famous and you're just going to make it, you know?
Yeah.
That's where I
felt
like.
What a recipe for success.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was young. I was 21 years old, you know?
Yeah.
And I saw an opportunity. It was one of those things, like I parked her car and I was like, should I leave her a card? Thinking now.
Did it smell nice in there?
It was nice. It was clean.
Okay.
She tipped me $10.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And anyway, I got fired for that. And yeah. It was a lesson. It was a humbling time. One, because I lost my job. Two, because somebody I really respected in the industry really got upset for me, like, mm-hmm. trying to do this. Maybe I don't need to do this anymore.
It's like a sort of a invasion of privacy in a way.
I get it. I totally get it now. If I could go back and do it differently.
Bro, I've done way cringier, dumb shit.
Yeah.
Not the case of Musgraves, but yeah.
You know, but I mean, any artist that I parked their car, I left a card. If you're watching, I may have left a card in your car, and I'm sorry. But that was the one that really kind of, you know, ended my job. And so, but that was the last job I've had. Been doing the music thing full-time since then.
That's great.
So if it didn't happen, I'd probably still be working there because the money was too good to not. And it was all cash, you know, tips.
Yeah, my mom would say it's like baptism by fire. Like
exactly. It was a moment that threw me into this thing of I can get another job or I can come here to do what I came to do, you know. Yeah. And so a guy that I was working with at the time was over at the house. We're just hanging out, and I was like looking for jobs online. And he says, dude, why are you looking for another parking job? You came here to do music. And so, you know, I'd saved up a bunch of money and tips. My rent was nothing at the time, you know, expenses low. And so going out, meeting folks, playing as much as I could till I finally got a paying gig. There's a guy's name is Jesse Savio. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's an artist. Thanks, Jesse. I credit him for helping me get my first paid gig. He says, hey, I cannot play the late gig at Taco Bell Cantina tonight. Can you fill in for me? It's a 4-hour gig. It pays $75. And I was like, I've made it. I'm getting paid to play in Nashville. And so that kind of kickstarted the making a career playing music. You know, from then on, we were playing a lot more downtown at the time.
Yeah. And that's Taco Bell that has liquor, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I got a free Baja Blast with tequila in it every time. It was like, it was an awesome gig. It was my first paying gig, too. Cool. And so
I've never gone down there. I don't know why.
You're not missing much.
It
sounds like Taco Bell with liquor, though.
It is interesting, and it's fun to stop into. I think for a while, Ward was booking it, too.
Yeah.
Like his company.
It was Jam Factory. It was Whiskey Jam Roadshow at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's how I got involved with Whiskey Jam Roadshow. It's turned into Jam Factory, which helped put us into some better venues downtown.
Yeah.
And ultimately where I've played the last 4 years until just a few months ago.
Sick.
And so it was a defining moment that helped me, you know, transition from losing my job, parking cars, to like not having a day job but just doing music. You know? And so
That's special, man.
It was an awesome thing. Yeah. I was so upset that I got fired because I'd never been fired. I took pride in being like a good worker, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I always worked, always had a job in high school and stuff. And so I was like, oh my God, these people thought that they got to fire me, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that sucks. But again, that was the last job that I had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been fired from a couple jobs in it.
Same.
And both, it's not like I did anything bad or whatever, but it doesn't feel good.
No, it doesn't.
You know, especially when you take pride in what you do.
Yeah.
Like, I got fired from a guitar teaching gig because I had to miss too many of my students' lessons because of drumline competition. You know what I mean? It's like I was in high school, so
yeah.
Just shit like that.
Yeah, man, it just feels doesn't bad. Feel good to get fired. Yeah.
No, but there's no right time to really take that step of focusing on it.
It was a sink or swim moment.
Yeah.
It was a defining moment, I like to think. It was a sink or swim moment. I don't know, I say that a lot.
Yeah.
But it was being thrown into it rather than saying, oh, I'm going to quit my job to do music. It's like, I don't have a job to quit, and I'm in the area to do that.
Yeah.
Let's try to do it, you know?
When you were, like, moving to town, how did you know that Nashville was the right place to move? Or, like, what made you, like, drawn to here?
I think, you know, my hometown's only 8 hours from here.
Yeah.
It's in Texarkana. And whenever I was growing up, you know, I was playing music my whole life growing up. And the question was, oh, when are you moving to Nashville? When are you moving to Nashville? That was the thing. Mm-hmm. I'd never even been to Austin until we went there on tour a couple years ago. But Austin was a option whenever it was coming for me to decide where I was going to go. I was like, oh, maybe Austin, just because I heard Austin's cool. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Yeah. I don't know. Nashville was a little bit closer to home. Maybe not even that close. But it was, I don't know. Nashville was just always talked about as a kid. Going to Nashville, I mean, my papaw, he's like, you know, he's about to be 80 years old. And still he's like, Tootsie's is the best bar in this world, you know? And I, you know, when I first moved to Nashville,
not even the best bar in Nashville.
Right, I know. But like coming to Nashville, I was like, oh, I gotta see Tootsie's. Mm-hmm, you know, yeah. I just had this idea of what Nashville was, and that was something that was kind of always there.
I love that. Yeah. So, when you were back at home, were you playing full band gigs then, or was it mostly like singer songwriter acoustic style?
Most of the time, like whenever I was young, like my first gig, I think I was 12 years old.
Yeah,
it was me and my papa. We would go play at this nursing home once a month for mm-hmm. like 2 hours. We'd just swap songs. I was 12 years old, and they paid me like $50, and that was cool. And
that's like a gold mine when you're a kid.
It was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. And now they paid me and him total $50. I think he gave me the whole $50.
Yeah,
you know, he didn't need it. But from then on, you know, it's solo shows at restaurants, you know, mm-hmm. playing at bars, stuff like that, 4 or 5 hours. I didn't get playing with a band until I was in college.
Cool.
I was still like, you know, playing a lot, doing a lot of open mics. In my hometown, where there was open mics, there wasn't a lot. But mm-hmm. Any chance to play in front of anybody, I was, until I started, like, putting a band together in college.
Yeah.
Like, learning how to put together a show, bill a show, sell tickets, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which I'm still trying to figure that out right now, but...
Honestly, dude, like, you are gigging outside of town significantly more than most of the people that we talk to. Like, in town. You know what I mean?
That's on purpose.
Yeah.
For 4 years, we played downtown Nashville 5 nights a week. And I was like, if you're in Nashville, you can come see me 5 times this week.
Mm-hmm.
We made the transition in June of this year, of 25. Let my 4-year residency go to focus on touring because it was starting to get in the way of touring.
Yeah.
We're building a fan base now. It's nothing crazy, but we're selling tickets in places we've never been outside of Nashville.
Yep.
You know, all the way out to the West Coast.
Yep.
And... so we're really just trying to capitalize on that and go meet people who want to meet us.
Yeah.
And so
when you got your chops built up by that much gigging regularly, right? I mean, yeah. You paid practice kind of,
yeah,
you know?
No. You know, I log every show since I've moved to town. Every performance I have on BMI Live, you know, mm-hmm. Shout out to BMI. Love what you do.
Go ahead. Will you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So BMI or ASCAP has been on the question about song registration, stuff like that in Nashville. I personally like BMI. If you have your songs registered with BMI, you can go online to their website. It's called BMI Live. And you submit your set list that you played of your registered songs every time you play them in a venue. Most venues are registered with BMI, and every quarter you get a payment from that. And so I'm glad I learned that on. Not everybody knows that. If you don't know that, it's easy, and it's money that you're not expecting to get every quarter that just kind of pops up. And so I've kept up with every performance that I've ever had since I moved to Nashville on BMI Live. I mean, I don't really rely on that money, but it's nice to have that check every quarter.
Yeah.
But I'm about to hit 800 separate performances since moving here in January of 2020.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But the reps, I mean, we had to get the reps in. Most of them was playing to nobody, you know. But separate performances, almost 800 right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's something to say about that, too. Like, some of the artists that, like, kind of pop up on socials, when a room's not full, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you can play to no one, you can play to everyone.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, I think for us, we don't know what to do if people show up, you know? I mean, I think I'm just kind of being funny about it. But yeah. We played to so many empty rooms over the years. I'm talking drive 9 hours, you know, play to 9 people. Lose $700, you know, like, you know, you got to be crazy to keep doing that over and over.
Yeah.
We're not doing that anymore. People are showing up. That 6 has turned to 60 in some places, way more than that. And so we're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Everybody is, man.
That's all we're doing.
And that's the thing that I figured out the fastest when I got here was like, all that this place is a collection of really smart people that have reps at doing things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that are just like too stubborn to quit.
That's it. Yeah. I think I saw something the other day. It's like the people who end up making a long lasting career are the ones who just like won't give up after hearing no a million times.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the key is those people that tell you no aren't the right people to have in your corner.
Yeah. Well, I think when I say the word no, like walking out and there's six people in the crowd, it's like, no, that's not it. You know, you put a song out and it doesn't do anything. No, that's not it. You're hoping for that. Yes, this is working.
Yeah.
And after so many of like, oh, this is not working. There's a few of them where we're like, this is working.
Yeah.
And as it goes on, the more effort we put into it, the more often that we're saying, yes, this is kind of working.
Yeah.
And so it's a long time that's been put into this, but, and we still got a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah.
A lot of building, a lot of growth to have, but, I don't know. We're celebrating every victory, you Absolutely. Know, and they're starting to be more of them.
How many, if you're talking about your band, like how many guys do you have in your normal set?
So when we're on the road, a four-piece is what we rock with. Bass, drums, guitar, saxophone.
Yep.
My wife comes, she does tour management type stuff, and we typically bring a videographer.
Cool.
So four-piece band, six-piece team, and we're expanding on the team this year.
Cool.
Might add some keys to the mix. Yeah. But if we're in Nashville, we have more room to work with. Yeah, you know, we do a show in Nashville probably every 9 or 10 months right now.
Cool.
And, you know, we have the big band, six, seven, sometimes eight-piece band, and that's always really fun. And one day we'll be able to bring that on the road, but as an independent touring artist, unfortunately, money is a factor.
Right.
And that's
you can't go lose $700 every show.
You cannot do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the four-piece is what we do on the road right now.
Yeah, that's cool. What kind of, like, rooms are you playing? Is it, like, small, like, club shows? Like, is that kind of the general vibe?
I would say 85% of the shows that we're doing are between 100 and 300 cap rooms.
Yeah.
And with the exception of some markets, we've stepped up, which is a cool thing.
Yeah.
A very small amount of like fairs and festivals and stuff like that, but it's mostly 100 to 300 cap rooms.
Cool.
Yeah.
So intimate experience.
Yeah.
And like, if you're listening to this and you haven't listened to your music, how would you exactly describe that?
Yeah.
And then after we get through that, let's talk about the live show.
I think it starts with the word soulful for me. Mm-hmm. I think it's a soulful take on a lot of different sounds. It's blues, it's rock, it's R&B, it's country. But it's a soulful take on it. I think ultimately it's got to feel good, I think. And I think that's what we just kind of go for sonically, is just a warm, feel-good feeling that is soulful. But it's got a lot of sub-sounds as well.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, there's a lot of depth to what you do. And even if you're listening to your catalog of stuff that you have on streaming, there's, like, variances and, you know, kind of like you're spread out. I've only gotten to see your live shows in town.
Okay.
So, with, you know, like you said, some of the, like, bigger pieces. But honestly, your live show stands out, too.
I appreciate you saying that.
You can see when you're performing that you have reps, you're comfortable, and the band is, too, you know? And, like, you can kind of tell when people play together a significant amount of time. And sonically, what you do stands out in a crowd of Nashville folks.
I appreciate you saying that. I think the way I like to think about it, I think we're still in a similar lane. I think the idea is to stand out a little bit, but, I mean, this is country music capital right here. Mm-hmm. There's country in the sound. I'm from Arkansas. Like, you can't hide that.
Right.
But it's got a little soulfulness to it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think a lot of it ends up being just kind of what comes out. That's kind of what we want, is for it to come out natural and feel good.
Yeah. Who are you listening to growing up?
Everything.
I mean, I hear Stevie Wonder, like, you know.
I mean, I listen to Stevie Wonder growing up. You know, there's a, I mean, I think growing up, especially my dad, had a variety of music he listened to. Anytime we were in the car with him, he had this old Suburban, and under the back seat, he had two, what looked like a suitcase-style CD box. And every time we would want to stop and, like, change a CD, we'd pull over, he'd get it out, look, pick one. And it was something different almost every time. You know, we're listening to Run DMC for a long time. We're listening to George Strait for a long time. Stevie Wonder was in that list. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say that, you know, I can't really narrow it down to one or two things, you know, but it's a huge melting pot of music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you can hear that sonically. Like you said, the soulfulness is kind of the thing that kind of steers to center, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is cool too, and specifically leaning towards that for the live show, right? The the laying heavy on guitar and you know what I mean? Just making it a fun show.
Yeah.
I imagine like in my head when you said you're playing 100 to 300 cap rooms, like how fun that Jed Harrelson show is at a room like that.
It's cool. We're doing something different this year. Like we're finally like implementing a VIP ticket this year.
Yeah.
Which is a cool step.
Yeah.
You know, what has been cool, and I think what we'll end up missing is at these small intimate shows, we meet damn near everybody that shows up. You know, the people that show up an hour before the door, we're outside talking to them. After the show, we're there till the last person leaves. And it's sad to see that we're still going to be doing that. But we're going to add an intimate, less crowded, less hectic experience with the VIP ticket.
Yeah.
Was that going to include like a performance? Or?
Yeah, we're going to do like a little acoustic 3-song thing, a Q&A, a weightless merch line. And then we'll do like a signed Polaroid photo, stuff like that. And we're only selling like 10 or 15 per show, depending on where we're going.
Yeah.
But just, you know, add a little bit to the gas tank, you know, stuff like that. And people are buying them, you know. And in these upcoming dates, we already have sold out of some VIP tickets. Now, those are maxed at like 10 or 15 tickets, but still, there's 10 or 15 people who want an intimate experience, which has never happened before.
No, I think that's so important too. Like, I think about bands like Musket on Bloodline, right?
Love those guys, yeah.
And those guys have always historically gone out to the merch line and met everyone, right?
We opened up for them in my college town.
Sick.
Those guys are awesome.
Yeah.
They connect with their fans.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that you talk about, like, you know, gives that intimate experience. Like, that's how you build a super fan.
Yeah.
If you can give them experience that isn't something that they would normally get from going to see another show, that's what's going to make them follow your career and tell 10 friends about you the next time you're in town, you know?
I think that's what natural growth and organic growth is.
Yeah.
Right there. If you're still having things grow with word of mouth in 2026, that's organic. You know, it's hard to do that. And that's what we're doing. We are making a bunch of friends is what we're doing. And the numbers are slowly starting to go up.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's cool to see that too. I mean, we always talk like there's no right or wrong way to do anything.
Not at
right?
all.
But the way you're doing it, it's getting your chops and like getting the live show to be seamless. Then it's taking it to the people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that is the way that this thing has worked for generations.
I still think there is a way to do it that way.
Yeah.
We call it the grassroots way or the DIY way, you know?
Yep.
The live performance is a huge aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. And 100%.
Bringing that to people, it's cool to say, hey, we're going on tour. Look where we're going to play music.
Mm-hmm.
People might not be at these places, but it's cool to go there and do it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's fucking badass, dude.
It's cool. Yeah. I'm very proud of it. And I'm so passionate about it.
Yeah.
And I'm very blessed that I get to do what I do
with
who I do it with, you know?
Well, that's it too. Like you have found the guys that feel like family and you get to bring your wife family on the road.
It wouldn't work without her.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, she holds it all together.
Yeah.
You know,
you gotta have someone steering, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But
wrangling the cats.
Yeah. I think that's super cool. And honestly inspiring too, in that sense of like, you know, there's no right way to get started. There's no right time to move to Nashville.
Mm-mm.
Just whatever works for the person and when it goes.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about music too. Do you have anything like in the on the books coming up for this year?
We're just finished shooting a video for a song we're dropping in March.
Yeah.
It's called Hot Damn.
Yeah.
We're releasing 5 singles this year throughout the year and a 6th Christmas song.
Oh, awesome.
So we'll do a Christmas song in November. We're building up a project. You can call it an EP. I wouldn't say it's an I don't like the term EP, but it will be my first release. It's not just a single.
Yeah.
And it'll be 5 songs, and we're in the process of finishing that up. I'm not sure exactly when we're going to drop it, but it's going to be like a strategic moment. You know, if something big happens, which, you know, we're trying every day for something to happen.
Right.
If something happens where it makes sense to release a project, we have it ready to go.
Yeah.
But I'd like to say that 2026 will be the year we release the most music we've ever done.
Yeah.
Because I've released a song every 4 months for 5 years now is what we've done.
Yeah.
I think we're at 15 or 16 songs out right now. And we're going to do way more than that this year, ideally. You know? But we just finished up one in the studio last week. Shot a video for it last night. It was cool.
Oh, cool. Congrats.
Yeah, it was cool. Thank you. It was we filmed it in this studio. It was like every inch of the place was covered in like this tinfoil shiny stuff, like really bright, shiny room. it was cool. We got a stylist and stuff. It was probably the most professional video we put together before.
That's cool.
And that was last night. Yeah.
Is it funky?
It's funky, dog. It's funky. Yeah. But yeah, that's what we got going. A lot of music coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any shows that you have like in the books that you're really excited about?
Yeah. I just booked. I'm not sure when this is going to air, but maybe we'll announce it. I don't know.
Just announce it, bro.
Yeah. We just booked the Basement East as a headline show.
Sick.
Fuck yeah.
For September.
That's awesome.
And it's on a Saturday night too.
It's great.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
What's funny is, you know, over the years I've tried so many times to book a show there and they're like, you know, you can have a Wednesday night or a Thursday night. And I've always asked them for a Friday or Saturday and they've said no grow. And they said yes to a Saturday in September. So that's a big one. That's something we're really hoping to pack in.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think playing at the Basement East, if you can sell out the Basement East, that's like a rite of passage. You know,
agreed.
That's one of the few historic classic venues that's still around in Nashville. So many of them have been gone over the years. Hmm. But the Basement East, I've never even been to the Basement East. Not even once. I said I'm not going until we play it.
Hmm. And it's a great venue.
Yeah. I've heard so many awesome things, and I hope we sell it the fuck out.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't...
Oh, you're good.
Yeah.
You can cuss on here.
Yeah, we don't mind.
Yeah. No. Especially if you're hyping up your own music.
Yeah. No, that's something we're super excited about.
Yeah.
Now, we just released our spring, early summer tour dates, and we're releasing a lot more for the fall and stuff, too. But the Basement East in Nashville.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Talk about, like, your booking process. Are you doing that? Or
so, as... finish the question. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, you're good.
I have booked myself for the last or forever until about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
I signed a deal with Dynamic Talent Agency.
Cool.
They're based out of Sacramento, but just opened a Nashville office. It's small. It's boutique. Some people that really believe in what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we're about 2 months into that relationship, and it's going well.
Great.
It's awesome. Yeah. Some guys who kind of see the vision and have the opportunity to help us where, you know, booking as an independent artist, you send 100 emails, you get 98 no's.
Yeah.
And two people who just say, you know, quit messaging me, you know.
Yeah.
And so very rarely is a yes. We're seeing more yeses now. That's what we wanted.
Yeah.
More yeses at more respectable places. Booking yourself and the way we booked, we played some rough joints.
Yeah.
Some places that I don't know that I would ever want to step foot in anymore.
Yeah.
But I would wake up every morning, you know, I would go to the gym and then I'd come back home and I'd send emails and just try to fill up the calendar. I've got this wall calendar that's my whole year all on one wall. So I got my 25, 26, 27, how it's been the last, you know, I just added my 27. Mm-hmm. But I would just try to fill up that calendar as much as I could with as many shows as I could, no matter where it was, no matter what city. We're making a route. I don't care if it's the ice cream shop. We're playing it and we're going to put it on a tour poster.
Yeah.
And so 5 years of doing that, finally we've been able to build leverage in markets and learn how to book efficiently. And now we have a team that's doing it with us. And so the booking process is something I am very, very passionate about as an independent artist. But it took so much of my time.
Yeah.
50% of my time was allocated to booking when it should have been music.
Focus,
you know,
on the craft. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now we have the time to focus on the craft, to hone in, to write, to record, to produce.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we got some people who are helping us out.
Does it feel strange to sort of delegate that task, even though it's still an agency that you are obviously having a good time with?
I think that is an awesome question.
Thank you.
I think, you know, for so many years, you craft this little email that says, hey, this is who I am. This is where I want to come play. This is when I want to come play it. And after so long, you put so much time into something that what I've ultimately done is just, you take it. I've had a couple meetings with you. We've had coffee a few times, but here, take this thing that I've spent countless hours on and do it better than I'm doing it. That's ultimately what you're doing when you're signing a booking deal.
Yeah.
It was hard. It's definitely hard. And I'm still like, hey, what y'all doing over there? Yeah. Y'all doing anything? I'm still very hands-on. We meet once a week, and so they're doing a great job. They are. But I'm still like, what y'all doing over there? Y'all booking right now? You know? And so, because it was an all-the-time thing for me. And so it kind of feels weird now that I'm like, I'm not booking today. I can do other things. And leaving that to somebody else has been an awesome feeling. Yeah,
that's cool. And then it's finding the new routine and you know, what you focus on. What's your relationship like with social media? I know every artist, like, it's a little weird.
Yeah,
but
I think for me, social media has always kind of come honest.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the same social media, like Instagram account since, you know, 2011, maybe 2012. Well, it's funny. I was in the parking lot earlier, and people were doing these like 10 years ago on Instagram thing. So I swiped all the way down. I've always posted. I've always tried to promote stuff. To me, I think it comes about honestly.
Yeah.
And I think the way I'm approaching it is I'm not waking up every day and thinking, what kind of piece of content am I making today? But what we've done ultimately is in the last 5 years, we've accumulated so much video content. We document everything we do musically, basically. That's the content right there. And just putting it out consistently.
Showing people what it looks like.
I got my notification yesterday on Instagram. It says, congratulations on sharing content for 106 consecutive weeks. Which I thought was like, that's awesome. You know, if you just post for 106 consecutive weeks, it starts to become easy. It's just a part of my day now.
Yeah.
And consistency. So, I do it about the same time every afternoon. Like, you know, I tell my wife after dinner, I'm like, hey, I'm going to do my social media stuff real quick. It takes me about 45 minutes. And then I let it do its thing.
Cool.
I try not to like sit and consume and like scroll. I try to use it as the tool that I think it's meant to be. Not to say it, every once in a while I don't get on there and scroll. Mm-hmm. But social media and me have a good relationship, and
good.
It's it's I don't know. I think it's fun. It's fun to build something, and it's fun to share things.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is a good place to kind of share what you're doing and share the successes, and the more engaged you can keep people, the more likely they are when you come to an area near them to come out to a show.
Yeah. Now I do think that showing all the only good things that happen in your life, it's a weird thing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, why don't we share the bad things? I don't really share the bad things. Most people don't share the bad things, you know? Social media is weird. I'm glad I found a good relationship with it, but I understand why people have a hard time with it. It is difficult. It's gross. It can be negative on a lot of things. There's a lot of other opposite effects of it, too.
For sure.
So, I don't know. I respect it. Try not to let it run me.
Yeah, makes sense.
Sounds healthy.
Yeah, I know.
Man, we're working on that right now. Trying to be healthy.
Hey, that's what it's all about. New year, new work on being healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what else are you doing besides music and stuff, man? You got any fun hobbies or what? Gym?
I'm an avid gym goer, I think. I try to go 5 days a week if I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not crazy bodybuilder. It makes me feel good. It makes me think better. And I know that sounds all cheesy and stuff.
It's true, man. It fixes your brain.
Yeah,
right?
It fixes your brain.
Go for a run or lift something that's heavy off the ground.
Yeah, do something that wears you out every day, you know. I think Matthew McConaughey said something about that. He says, I want to be worn out once a day forever. You know, that's what's going to keep me spry, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. I like to cook a lot. We're on this, we're doing whole food diet right now. We're just eating whole foods is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
And, if I'm not playing music, I'm cooking. If I'm not cooking, I'm probably printing merch. And that's a hobby that's kind of music.
What do you mean, like printing your shirts?
I print all my shirts, koozies.
What?
We do bags, too. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like purses?
No, it's more like a little burlap bag that you'd go to the grocery store for. You know?
Oh,
like,
a tote.
A tote. Yeah, that's what it is. It is a tote.
If someone buys a piece of your merch, your hands have literally been on it.
I mean, depending on the time of year, sometimes my sweat too, man.
Yeah.
In the summer, I got my sunroom, and I got my shirt press in there. If you bought a Jed Harrelson shirt, it was printed by me.
100%. So when the time comes, is that going to be something that you're going to be able to delegate to another thing?
That's the question. Obviously, what I want for my career is for it to be way too much. Like, you know, we're not selling a crazy amount of shirts that's, you know, that is unmanageable by myself, you know.
Yeah.
What we're selling in 1 month, ideally, we'll start to sell every show. Once we're doing that, then it's going to be delegated, you know.
But and you'll have your sunroom back just for
And then I'll have the sunroom for clay making. We've got a whole little clay thing, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, no more printing in there at some point. Yeah. Right now, it's very manageable, and it is a hobby that contributes to my career that I'm very passionate about, and it makes money.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's another thing that's in-house and that we're proud of. That's but cool. That is, I guess you'd say that's a hobby.
I mean, I would rather buy a t-shirt printed by my favorite artists, you know, than one that was just made somewhere.
Yeah. When we, like at the merch table, sometimes we have like this little screen. Like I bring my laptop and I got this time-lapse video. I mean, like,
that's cool. That makes me want to spend more
money. So people see it at a distance. They're like, whoa, this dude made this shirt. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can see, not everyone's perfect. It's just simple silk screen. And, you know, they got some character to it. And so there have been some we all got a little character. But there have been some people who have, like, sent their shirt back and be like, hey, I loved your shirt, but it's messed up. Can you send me another one? And we'll always send another one.
Yeah.
But not every print's perfect, you know.
Makes sense.
When you're printing, you know, 100 shirts in one day, you're not really – I'm just kind of in this zone where I'm like, print, print. And you don't quite look at every one of them. Now that my wife's more involved, she definitely – does the quality control. She's like, yo, what the hell is this? And it's just a bad print. And so we send those to Goodwill.
Yeah, or just throw them in the crowd.
Well, yeah, that too. You know, we've done that in the past.
Yeah.
We do end up taking a lot of them to Goodwill. And I've even seen my shirts being sold in Goodwill before. Not because somebody went and brought it, but, you know, here's 50 shirts that we can't sell. Put them in Goodwill.
Yeah.
And there's only a few around here. So.
Yeah.
But I've seen my messed up merch shirts in Goodwill stores before.
That's awesome. Funny as heck.
It's a cool thing.
I saw Kaylee, my girlfriend, had one of her shirts. It's like one of her buddies sent her a video. It's like in a vintage shop. You know, it's like one of her first like face tees from like, it's like 2020 or something like that. Yeah. So it was kind of funny, you know, to see your own merch being sold elsewhere.
It's a cool feeling.
Yeah. Circle of life.
Yeah. Circle of life.
For the t-shirts.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Like I've seen like Raise Rowdy stuff on like Depop, or someone would send it from a thrift store.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thing. Also, our buddy Ryan Nelson one time gave his sweatshirt to a homeless guy, so I saw a homeless guy wearing a Raise Rowdy sweatshirt before.
That's awesome.
I saw one at the gym yesterday. A hat. Somebody was working out in a hat. I was like,
my wife stole the one that I have, and she wears it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
Family, brother.
Circle of life with t-shirts right there.
I'd honestly, like what I said, I'd rather have that than someone just throw it away.
Yeah, you know? 100%. Yeah.
At least someone can use it.
Being used. Yeah. You know, even if it's the dog laying on it in the bed.
Yeah.
Hey, that's made with love right there.
That's right.
It. Yeah.
You love that dog more than you love most people.
Exactly.
So that's cool. Anything else that you want to like chat about? Just topics or anything else you got coming down the line?
I don't know. I mean, We got a lot of stuff coming on. This is arguably going to be the busiest year we've ever had. We're just trying to keep meeting folks and talking about what we're passionate about. And
where can folks follow you? Let's do that. Why don't you say your social media stuff?
You can find me anywhere at Jed Harrelson. I've not found
another. Is Jed short for Jedward?
It's not. It's not Jedison. It's not Jedediah. Mm-hmm. I've had Jedward been asked before.
My drumline teacher in high school's name is Jed, and he's a cool guy, just
really?
Like you. Yeah, but he was James Edward Davis.
Yeah, so you know, I still respect that in the world of Jeds. I'm in this Facebook group called like Jed, and it's like thousands of Jeds in this Facebook group. And
that must be an Arkansas thing, I guess.
No, it's statewide or it's countrywide. Mm-hmm. There's a guy I go to the gym with at the Northwest Y. His name is Jed. Yeah, and so he's interesting. He's got this hat, he's got 10 hats, different hats that just say Jed on top.
I should get a Kurt hat.
Yeah. At least people know your name, you know? Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. It's a cool name tag for him.
It's funny.
But yeah, I'm bringing him a shirt that I printed for, he heard that I printed shirts and he asked me for a shirt that's special for his Jed. And so I'm going to bring him a shirt.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, follow Jed Harrelson, follow the Jed's Facebook group. You know, it'd be a funny shirt when you guys get together. It's like the Judds, but the Jeds.
The Jeds.
Yeah, you got to play a Jed Fest when you guys.
Jed Fest. We'll have a Jed Fest one day.
I love it. But also, excited about that basement show, brother.
Yeah, that's awesome. Man, it's super exciting. We haven't even announced it yet, but this is the exclusive look, though.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a cool time, and honestly, that's such an iconic venue, like you said. And I mean, from thinking about going from Broadway to playing the Basement East on a weekend night, it's freaking amazing.
It's crazy. not to ditch Broadway. Broadway.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Made a living for me for a long time.
Yeah, and you probably made good fans there too.
Yeah, yeah. There's people who will come out to buy a ticket and be like, "We saw you at the 12:30 Club in 2022."
Yeah,
you know? It's like, that's cool. I don't know. People do remember.
Oh yeah. Hey, there's no right or wrong way to get a fan.
Not
right?
At all.
If the live set's bumping, they're gonna remember.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
And like you said, that pays the bills for however long you need it to.
And for so many people, I mean, there's money to be made down there. Mm-hmm. No, there really is. And so, I'm glad I got a taste of that for a little bit, because that's kind of what I think drives the inner part of Nashville, or is those people who are down there playing for these people come to town.
Yep.
And I'm glad I got a taste of that. I don't want to taste it much anymore. But
yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was cool. It taught me a lot.
Tasting one of those Mountain Dew with tequila in it, though.
Baja Blast.
You know,
yeah.
I might go play at the Taco Bell Cantina one more time.
Just for a release party, dude.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Album release at the Taco Bell Cantina.
That's where you do the VIP experience.
At the Taco Bell. That's funny. So, yeah.
Well, brother, thanks for hopping on and
and
being with us. It's been good to like kind of get more of your story. We've of course met in like passing and got to see you play, but it's good to get to know a little bit more about you.
I appreciate you having me. I love talking and I like capturing it. So I appreciate y'all having me.
We appreciate you, brother. Well, guys, thanks for listening to the Rage Ready Podcast. I'm Nicky T.
I'm Kurt Ozon.
And we'll see you in the front row.